Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jimmy Floyd in for Brian Lehrer, and we are in our second day of trading after the Standard & Poor's downgrade of the U.S. credit rating from a AAA to a AA+. This morning, we're going to talk about the short-term and long-term economic impact of it all with Marketplace's Heidi Moore. Heidi, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
And later, Heidi, we're going to be joined by an expert in the psychology of the marketplace to talk about that aspect of the story. In fact, he's with me here in studio now. Frank Murtha, welcome.
Thank you.
But we want to begin our coverage with WNYC's Ilya Marich. He joins us from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. Ilya, we're just about 30 minutes into trading, and we did hear the bottom line in the newscast. But for those diehard Brian Lehrer fans who just may be tuning in, give us the bottom line again.
Bottom line, the Dow right now is up 2%, more than 200 points. Right before the opening bell, there was clapping on the floor of the exchange. That's not so unusual, but they weren't clapping yesterday. And I think the reason traders felt optimistic about today was that Dow futures were up before the opening bell. And not just that, but markets in Europe seemed to have stabilized in trading there. So I think there's clearly a much more positive feeling here today.
So I heard you use two words there that I find interesting, optimism and positive. Is that the mood on Wall Street today?
Well, there's optimism and then there's optimism. The traders I spoke with yesterday morning were optimistic that the losses could be contained, right? And at that point, the Dow was down, I don't know, 100 points or maybe 200 points. They thought it would settle there. That's not the way it ended up. The market really tumbled. It was the biggest loss since 2008.
Yes.
So now I think maybe we're seeing what some of the traders I spoke with were hoping for, which is a containment of the loss, a sense that, like, okay, there's been some kind of readjustment, but now we know where bottom is and we know where we're going to be trading. That said, there have been so many sharp losses in the past few weeks that markets really are unstable, and I'm not sure how confident anybody really is.
How much, Ilya, when you speak with traders yesterday and the little bit you've been able to this morning, how much reflection on 2008 has there been? I know everyone that I've talked to who's involved with the markets has brought up the specter of 2008.
You know, one of the traders I spoke with actually talked about 1987, which is a crisis that I can't remember that clearly. But the truth is, I mean, that's a good point, because a lot of the people who are working here now were here in 2008, and a lot of them were here in 1987, and they're sort of habituated to this kind of convulsion. They know to expect it. Sometimes you overreact, sometimes you underreact, but I think it is on everyone's brain.
Yeah, nerves of steel, part of the business there. Last question for you. Any reaction this morning to President Obama's speech of yesterday? The analysts saying that it would have little or no effect, but you're there on the ground. Does that seem to be the case, at least in the short term?
Well, it didn't go over well in real time yesterday afternoon, right around 2 o'clock when the president started speaking. The stock market plunged, and they stayed down. Looking forward to the rest of today, I think what will be interesting is Ben Bernanke is meeting with the rest of the Federal Reserve. I don't believe they're expected to make any kind of public comments, and maybe that's a good thing, because sometimes when policymakers do talk about the rotten or the uncertain state of the economy, it can have the effect of just giving people more jitters.
Ilya, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jamie.
That's WNYC's Ilya Marich on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange to talk about the long-term as well as the short-term implications of all that has happened in the last few days. I have with me Heidi Moore, who is New York Bureau Chief of American Public Media's Marketplace. Heidi, it seems that we're in for another roller coaster day, and although we heard a wee bit of optimism there from Ilya Marich, the word we're hearing everywhere else is the word crisis. But I guess the real question on everyone's mind is, are we headed into another recession?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really interesting question right now. This isn't a crisis. It's not just going to be a volatile day on Wall Street. It's probably going to be up and down in a roller coaster for a week, maybe even a month, as people process this information. It's not a crisis right now because it's just a stock market movement. A crisis would be if the banks ran out of money or, you know, if people didn't buy treasury bonds anymore. And the problem, of course, is this recession. A lot of people feel that there is a greater chance that we're falling into a deeper recession or another recession, depending on your point of view. And it's very hard to make a good argument for growth right now in the economy. We have nothing to spur new jobs. We have nothing to spur spending. We're still deep in debt. And so it's really hard to believe in kind of an upward trajectory.
And Heidi, in America, the news this summer has been dominated by bad economic stories, the debt ceiling debate, the credit downgrade. And then, of course, there's been the long-term story of the debt problems in Europe. But isn't there a simple thread running through all the stories, which would be the whole world economy sputtering?
It is, and the simple thread is consequences, right? I mean, this is not a story of redemption right now. I mean, we're basically paying the bills for our overspending and our irresponsible financial management as a planet over the past 10, 20 years. So we're just going to have to work our way out of that hole. We're going to have to pay down the debt. Europe's going to have to pull its house in order, and that's going to take a long time. All the people I've talked to, fund managers, bankers, everyone says this will take years at least to pull out of. But at least if we get started, which it now looks like we are, then we'll get somewhere.
And so, of course, it's not surprising that even after a weekend of silence that President Obama would come to the podium to speak to America about, if it's not a crisis, coming out of this recession. Let's take another listen to President Obama yesterday afternoon.
What sets us apart is that we've always not just had the capacity, but also the will to act, the determination to shape our future, the willingness in our democracy to work out our differences in a sensible way, and to move forward, not just for this generation, but for the next generation. And we're going to need to summon that spirit today.
Heidi Moore, what did President Obama need to accomplish with his remarks yesterday, and did he do it?
I think it would put a lot of pressure on one speech to try to sort of create a better feeling about what happened with this downgrade, which was a huge and mortifying psychological hit to the markets and to many people who work in the economy. One of the things that President Obama also said was, we don't need a ratings agency to tell us we have an unsustainable deficit. So he acknowledges the problems, and, you know, I think that's important, but and it's important that he, you know, mentioned or tried to remind people of the glory of America's past when we could work through political problems. But the core of this downgrade is that S&P didn't believe that we could do that anymore. They believed that, you know, we had pushed the country through partisan bickering within 10 hours of running out of cash. And they said, now we cannot trust the system. So basically, that's what has to happen. I mean, the politicians have to learn to work together, truly, not just remember that they once did, but actually make some compromises and work together for the better of the country, which didn't happen in the debt ceiling deal.
Well, let's listen to a part of that moment where he talks about the downgrade.
There will always be economic factors that we can't control. Earthquakes, spikes in oil prices, slowdowns in other parts of the world. But how we respond to those tests, that's entirely up to us. Markets will rise and fall, but this is the United States of America. No matter what some agency may say, we've always been and always will be a AAA country.
But here is President Obama talking about another opinion of U.S. credit worthiness from Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett, who knows a thing or two about good investments, said, if there were a quadruple A rating, I'd give the United States that. I and most of the world's investors agree.
Now, Heidi Moore, the president is right. Warren Buffett knows a thing or two about investing. You know, if one opinion is not worth a whole lot, why would another opinion be worthwhile?
Well, I think what President Obama probably was trying to respond to was, how do we get confidence in the creditworthiness of the United States? Now, the thing is, a lot of people would agree with what Warren Buffett said, including S&P. I mean, they're not saying that this is a AAA or a quadruple A-rated country, but everyone agrees the U.S. is still creditworthy. We will always be able to pay our bills. Nothing will change that. What concerned S&P was whether we would be willing to pay them if we came into another political crisis like the one we had with the debt ceiling negotiations. So, you know, treasuries are still strong. They're still really good as collateral in the financial markets. None of that has changed. But, you know, the question is, we basically need to own up to our obligations and show that we're still worthy of holding the keys to the financial kingdom of the world.
Heidi Moore, there are some reports that folks on Wall Street heard about the S&P downgrade and that it was coming well in advance of Friday's announcement, and that is why the Dow Jones Industrial plunged 513 points last Thursday. Is there possibly any truth to that?
You know, it's best to reserve judgment until we have proof, but it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility. I mean, we see this with mergers and acquisitions all the time, that there are strange spikes in the stock prices of the companies involved well before the deal is actually announced, and the SEC has been looking into that. It's not, you know, we just came through a whole range of insider trading investigations from the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York and the Department of Justice and the SEC. Clearly, insider trading is not going to go away. So I guess the bottom line is, it could have happened, but we should reserve judgment until we have some sort of proof or investigation from regulators.
It's a nice segue to bring in Frank Murtha. He is the managing partner of Market Psych. It's a consulting firm which specializes in financial psychology. Frank, I bet you're very busy this week.
Phone's ringing off the hook.
All right. Well, I was surprised to learn that there's a whole field dedicated to neurofinance, the psychology not just of investing, which is one area, but the psychological health of those who work in the markets. I bet they could use it now. There's a whole lot to talk about. We want to invite our callers into this conversation. There's a headline today, a giant headline on the Daily News, which just reads "Panic." And we want to know if that's how you are feeling, especially if you work in the markets, down on Wall Street or in the financial sector. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or even if you don't work in finance, is it starting to get to you? Are you withdrawing all of your money from the bank and stuffing it in a mattress, as one article in the Times suggested some folks may be doing? How are you coping with all the gloom and doom economic news? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or you can go to WNYC.org. Because, Frank Murtha, we're at a point now where it's impossible to escape this coverage, even if you want to. And so today we wanted to try to do the responsible thing as a news organization and put it all in perspective. And you heard me ask Heidi Moore just a moment ago about the possibility that the early word on the street of a possible downgrade by Standard & Poor's before the fact might have led to a big sell-off on Thursday. It would certainly make some sense from a psychological point of view, right?
Oh, certainly. You know, getting a little heads up goes an awful long way. You know, one of the problems is that, you know, everybody knows the old expression, you want to buy low and sell high. But it becomes extremely difficult to do that in the moment because we're using a different part of our brain. The limbic system gets involved. The prefrontal cortex, which is the rational decision-making part, gets pushed to the side. And you can't help but have a darker, dimmer view that is ruled by the emotions of the moment. And right now, the emotions of the moment are fear and anger and a whole bunch of negative things that don't lead people to have confidence.
Well, we used to speak of markets 15, 20 years ago in terms of efficiency theory. Decisions made in the financial markets were made by cool heads for rational reasons. But maybe that just isn't how it works. Is there a new school of thought on market behavior?
Yes, there is. The field is generally referred to as behavioral finance, and it's essentially a way to correct from the theory of what people are supposed to do by factoring in what people actually do. And it's based on the fact that the default setting for investors is not rational. It's irrational, and it's irrational in predictable ways. So there's a lot more attention being paid to investing through that lens now.
Heidi Moore, as a journalist who observes these things from a different professional lens or through a different professional lens, what do you think when you hear that perhaps investors don't always behave from a rational perspective?
I agree wholeheartedly.
Oh, no.
I think they would as well. You know, it's when you have a stake like money in the market. I mean, when you have, whether it's your retirement savings or in the case of, you know, traders on Wall Street, the money that they manage, it it does create really interesting psychological responses. And it becomes like that. For instance, there's something on Wall Street called cocaine brain, where if someone keeps winning, if they keep making good bets, they actually almost feel they're invincible. They stop believing that they can lose. And so it's not a rational market. We all know that. And that's why it's important not to put too much stock in market movements, because the market isn't one entity. It is not a monolith. It is a lot of different people with different goals and different investments. And they very rarely have the same motivations.
Cocaine brain, however, Frank, sounds more like a Vegas phrase or phenomenon than something one would expect to find on Wall Street.
Well, certainly, we all know that investing isn't the same thing as gambling.
Okay, I'll just let that hang out there and go to Al in Morristown. Al, you're on WMYC with Heidi Moore and Frank Murtha.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for calling in.
Appreciate the conversation. As I'm listening, as I'm driving here up in North Jersey, a couple comments I'd like to make. First of all, I'm not in the financial markets as far as a working on Wall Street or any of that. I am a regular investor, Joe Citizen, so to speak. And this is the stock market to me is not a 2 or 3 week event. And people have short term memories. Stock markets are 1, 3, 5 year investment opportunities, not what happens in a 2 week time period where, yeah, the markets have dropped 15%. To me, it's a buying opportunity, first of all. And I think people forget. Just 2 years ago, or back when 9/11 happened and the markets crashed and burned, and how the markets are resilient and they do come back. So this panic that you're talking about, or people are talking about, first of all, I think is brought on by the overindulgence of the media. And I'm sorry I'm saying that. I know I'm on the radio, but both the radio as well as you know, television. It helps boost ratings by kind of continually talking about it. And it, so it's almost a self-serving situation where, yeah, by keeping this conversation going, you create more of a, not only a panic, but you also create more interest, which boosts ratings and everything else. So I'm sorry to say that, but I think there's a number of things going on here, and people should listen and then turn it off and move on to the next subject, and you'll see your portfolios and your investments somewhat back to normal, hopefully, in the shorter or medium term.
Thank you, Al, very much for your call, and certainly don't apologize, because I actually wanted to ask this next question of Heidi Moore, who is the bureau chief here in New York for Marketplace. Heidi, Al makes a very good point. The news media is in a tough spot because responsible journalists have to cover the markets and major events like the S&P downgrade, but the more we cover it, the more we contribute to the panic. So how do we resolve the dilemma, and aren't we a part of the problem, as Al suggests?
No, I don't buy it. I think that this is happening, right? The media isn't changing this. The media doesn't have any money in the market, right? We're not moving anything except with new information, and nothing that has happened here has new information, right? So if you take a look at regular investors, the ones that are most likely to, you know, read the news and respond to it, they're only about 10 to 20% of the market maximum. You know, everyone else is a professional, and they're not looking towards the press to tell them what's going on in the market. They can see it pretty much for themselves. They might see different parts of it, but, you know, there is always this question of whether by reporting on events you make them real or if you expand them. And in this case, this is an event that is happening completely outside the media complex, right? This is an S&P downgrade of one of the world's greatest economies in a major historical moment. To not inform people about that and to not take a look at, you know, how the markets and the economy are responding would be journalistic malpractice. Like, we have to report on this. business. And if it worries people, that's fine. It's worrying news. But, you know, hopefully they'll have a sense of perspective and they'll get that from the stories.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. My guests are Frank Murtha of Market Psych, a consulting firm specializing in financial psychology, and Heidi Moore of Marketplace. The front page banner headline today, Frank, in the New York Times reads, "Stocks resume free fall on fear over economic credit woes, and a wave of worry threatens to build on itself." So very different from Al's sentiment, Al, our last caller, and seems to fit right into your theory of psychology playing a big role in the way investors think. A wave of worry threatens to build on itself. In other words, psychology, unless people are very conscious and self-aware, could play a big role in the direction the market takes in light of recent events.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the fact is the media has an obligation to cover the events that are happening. And there's no good way around that. I think what it boils down to there is, are they covering it in a responsible fashion? Are they covering it in a rational fashion that gives people a better perspective? That's the key. But the greatest, I mean, I appreciated what that caller said. He was spot on. The greatest trap that people fall into is this relentless being drawn into a short-term focus. And when you're in that short-term focus and you're focused on the market, emotions rule. You have to constantly battle your own neurobiology and pull yourself out of it. And when you do that, you find that situations like this probably present wonderful opportunities. And they're very manageable if you have a plan in place.
All right. I think Michael may speak to that. He's in Westwood, New Jersey. Michael, you're on WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I can't agree with Al, the previous caller, anymore. I mean, I think this is a great buying opportunity. You know, everybody's running away, but there's great deals to be had out there. And I go back to, in 2008 when the market took a huge dive. Yeah, I started buying the S&P when it was down around 800, and I kept on throwing money into that. And I came out a huge winner, and you know what? I'm going to do it again. And as long as the markets keep taking a dive, I'm going to just keep buying because they are going to bounce back.
You've got nerves of steel, Michael.
No, I have a long outlook. You know, I'm not investing to take the money out next year or 2 years from now. You know, I'm planning on my retirement, and I plan on retiring well.
And Michael, do you work in the markets, if you don't mind my asking, or are you simply an investor?
No, I'm simply an investor. I mean, that's a good question. I do, you know, I have a few friends. We don't necessarily have an investment club, but we talk about the markets. I mean, it's just conversation. It's not politically motivated in any way. It's just, hey, look, we're on a bubble. It's going to burst. Let's take our money out and stick it in fixed income. And when it bursts, we'll jump back in the market and make a mountain of money. And that's what happened in 08. And, you know, again, I sent out an email a couple of weeks ago, and I said, hey, you know, where are we going with this hot mess? What's going to happen?
But you do keep yourself well informed.
Oh, I absolutely do. I mean, you know, I think anybody who's following the story is going to read a number of outlets, you know, different newspapers, different financial shows, and then from that, you know, make your decisions. But all in all, I mean, the writing was on the wall in 08, and I think it's the same now.
Well, we thank you very much for your call, and I'll get on your email distribution list after the program. Michael, thank you very much. And I suppose, Frank Murtha, from a psychological point of view, investors are using 2008 as a new reference point, either in a positive way like Michael, or perhaps in a nervous way or as a panic point.
Oh, that's a great point, Jamie. And there's more than one lesson that can be taken from 2008. It could be, oh my gosh, the market is a scary place and I need to get away from it. Or if you have patience and you have money on the sidelines, you're capable of taking advantage of it. What I think of 2008, I think of people getting cuts, literally cuts to their financial well-being. You know, as such, the way you deal with that cut is the same way you deal with a physical cut. First of all, you want to stop the bleeding. That's what people do. The next thing you want to do if you suffer a cut is make sure it doesn't become infected. So did those psychological wounds of 2008 get infected? That's the key. And if it does, it affects people going forward, makes it very hard to make good decisions.
But you're a psychologist, so I'll throw a term at you, PTSD.
Right.
I mean, people do have long-term psychological effects, even from wounds that have healed. And perhaps people, we heard Ilya mention at the outset, 2008 and 1987, people do look back, even though he was too young to remember the earlier event, people do look back, especially when they've lost so much money, they're quick to sell at the first sign of trouble.
Yeah, there's, when it comes to PTSD, one of the symptoms is something called an exaggerated startle response. It's literally if a door slams, people jump out of their seat because they have these flashbacks. You can see that happening in the market. That's a lot of the volatility that's going on, in my opinion. That's why people, for lack of a better word, need to have some form of therapy. It doesn't mean you need professional help, but you need to come to a place of peace with the wounds you've suffered, with the trauma you've suffered. Otherwise, you do have a market version of PTSD.
And Heidi Moore, it really has been rather easy to make money on Wall Street in the last year or so. Isn't that right? Hasn't the market been up since last August? And it's been rising fairly steadily until spring of this year.
Oh, yeah. No, the market's been great since 2009. It's been the, you know, 2 years of magical thinking. So, you know, I mean, it's true that, you know, these losses in the past week have been sort of rough to see, but nothing is permanent. I mean, we know that. That is history. Nothing is permanent. And so, you know, there are a lot of people who made a lot of money in the market over the past 2 years, and they're going to lose money, and then they'll make money again. I mean, it's a cycle. It's, you know, it's cyclical, as they say on Wall Street.
And I think that's probably the best lesson for life, the best coping strategy, Frank, is to remember that nothing is permanent. Life is cyclical.
Oh, absolutely. There's no arguing with that point. It's absolutely true. The only problem is it doesn't feel that way in the moment, and people can't get away from the fact that you make your decisions in the present tense. Mm-hmm. So the best thing you can do is try and, as much as possible, take a big step back. Realize that there are 300 million people in this country, give or take, and they're still going to want medicine, and they're still going to drink Coca-Cola, and probably use the drive-thru at McDonald's against their better judgment. So if you take a big step back and realize those things, yeah, it's a much more calming perspective that comes to you.
All right. Well, my guests have been Frank Murtha and Heidi Moore, New York Bureau Chief for Marketplace, and Frank Murtha's site is Market Psych. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. Up next, two people died in Sunday's triathlon along the Hudson River. When does sports become too extreme, if ever? Stay with us.